Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sutter, and joined by my co-host, Brennan Kleen. We have no guests for you today. We're going to be back with you tomorrow with Jackson Hoyer, the stepping. He's returning one more time before the draft starts. And crazy to say, Brennan, it's only a week away now, even though we've been talking about it for like the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, it's coming up quick, and there's a new rumor or craziness to dissect every day, it seems like.
Oh, for sure. And it seems like every day now, like you said, there's a new rumor. And on today's episode, we're going to touch on a little bit of the rumors. We had some technical difficulties on Monday, so we're kind of going to be touching back on some things we spoke more of on Monday for today's episode. But we're also going to touch on some fake trade rumors we're going to discuss, maybe some realistic options the Suns could do on draft night. I camp with two, Brennan camp with two. We're going to dissect from both angles and see if it makes sense at all. Maybe just talk a little bit more in general about some possible trade ideas for the Suns on draft night, because really, the Suns' draft workout today, they had Trayvon Duvall as the headliner, which tells you all you need to know about how kind of serious the Suns were about the workout. It was pretty much everyone at number 59. I'd be pretty shocked if Trayvon Duvall was getting looked at number 31. But the Suns are definitely doing their due diligence with the draft. And I guess I can start there, Brennan. Just what's your reaction to the Suns so far at their workouts? Because today they had six guys in. Probably all of them will be undrafted outside of Trayvon Duvall. I think Duvall probably would be a late second round pick with his shot. He didn't shoot it well at all today against Air. So just what's your thoughts on the Suns' draft process? Because for me, they've had five guys in, but the five guys that seem to be locking in on, especially Aaron Holiday, number 16 overall, they could all be had in trade-back scenarios. I think that might be an option they could be looking at.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the story of this draft for me right now, and it really doesn't seem to be crystallizing in any way heading into it, where I think every time we've talked about a workout, the guards that they've brought in, you kind of feel like they could be available at either spot. And we kind of talked about it with Chris as well yesterday, which is players like De'Anthony Melton, Jacob Evans, maybe Kevin Huerter. It suddenly looks like those guys are falling kind of out of nowhere in place of, I mean, I guess Aaron Holiday, Jerome Robinson, some of the names that are rising into the teens where those guys were projected. So it seems like really a week out, like we are right now, there's not really a ton of clarity. So the Suns are kind of able to bring guys in that they can, having two picks there, look at either one.
Even though, like we said, we're only a week away from today's recording, but what's your read on how they're going to use 16 and 31? Because I used to think they were going to pick 16 last week. This is how fluid it is with the draft season. You don't know what to believe nowadays. But at this point, if they're really serious about taking DeAndre at number one, maybe going in the veteran option with a win-now veteran like Kevin Love, Kemba Walker, just throwing those two names out there, not like there's anything out there reporting or anything, but just two possible names that make sense there, maybe for number 16 overall with some young assets, if they want to go in a more win-now direction with DeAndre and then maybe use number 31 as their one draft pick alongside Ayton. But what's your read on the whole situation? Because for me, I think that might be how they end up going.
Yeah, I agree that it's kind of a new thing pops into my mind every day about what they could do. It does sort of seem like they might be. I think that they'll be active. I think they'll make at least one trade on draft night. I'll put that first.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a situation with everything we've heard and how aggressive they seemingly are talking to other teams. Like, I can't imagine walking away on draft night not having at least have one trade. And I would imagine they also probably walk away with one. I don't know if they trade 59. I kind of feel like that's going to be a stash player. So really you're looking at two or three rookies and then maybe some future assets or a veteran in a trade. And I think 16, I would be surprised if they picked at 16, whether that's back or up or they don't pick at all again in the first round. I don't know. But it certainly seems that way with how many different kinds of rumors they've been mentioned in and just some of the names that potentially could be available. I kind of feel like Kevin Love won't be a draft day thing because the Cavs will be waiting on LeBron James probably unless a really good deal emerges that kind of suits them now and in the future. So you're probably looking at Kemba Walker, maybe one of the Blazers guards. I don't know. I feel like we haven't heard a ton of veteran names outside of Kemba that could be available. So really then you're looking at trading up or down.
I don't know why I feel this way, but I feel like maybe the Suns might be holding some of their assets for later on because this might be a time in the draft where they could really help facilitate a lot of trades as far as maybe if Portland and Cleveland want to talk about CJ McCollum and Kevin Love, for example, they could help with that and picks, maybe get a young asset back in return. do you feel like maybe that's a smart way to go about it at first, that they want to go the still be the aggressive route, but even that really wouldn't be bringing that star player right away?
Yeah, I hope that that's how they approach it. That's what I've really been waiting for them to be aggressive doing for a season and a half now. And they still have avenues into cap space this year if they wanted to. Doing something like that on draft night is a little more challenging. They'd have to be more creative about sending salary out because they don't have, you know, they can't free up the room on draft night like they can on July 1st when they can move on from Tyler Ulis, Alan Williams, Alex Len, and create cap space. So they're going to have to be a little more creative about, you know, Tyson Chandler, Jared Dudley probably leaving the team in that case, maybe Bender or Chris, if they're really going to be aggressive and taking a bad contract to get a future asset, those kinds of deals that they have had the potential to do for a while and just haven't done. So I hope that's one of the things that I've kind of tried to look at with my trades. I didn't really find an easy one because, again, it's just not something we've heard a ton about, but they should be looking at that kind of thing.
I agree with you. And I guess to dive right into it with the report we touched on Monday, but with technical difficulties, we're pushing back to today with a Trey Young rumor we spoke on with Chris yesterday, but we're going to dive in a little bit more further, just your thoughts on it, Brendan, because from my point of view, if the Suns do move up from 16 all the way up to the Trey Young range, which probably is around 6 to 9, I'd say 9 is probably his floor right now with New York, but what do you think it's going to take to get up there for him? Because obviously it's going to take 16, probably 31. I think those are the two likely picks that would be gone in a trade-up scenario, but what else is it going to take? Because I don't think 16 and 31 is getting you all like 6 to 8 spots up higher.
Yeah, so I was kind of looking, and maybe to lay the groundwork before our trades and to just kind of overlay this whole conversation. So the Suns in 2016 traded 13, 28, and the rights to Bogdanovich and a 2020 second rounder to Sacramento. That was, I believe, their own second for the number 8 pick, which obviously became Marquese Chriss. So that was one. And then last year, the Jazz traded Trey Lyles and the number 24 pick. That's really not that much, and they moved up 11 spots with just that deal. I think the Nuggets kind of overvalued Lyles there. And then last year as well, we saw it took 15 and 20 to move up to 10 on Portland's part to draft Zach Collins. I think that 15 and 10 or 15 and 20 to get up to 10 is something to kind of try to gauge the value for what it would take for the Suns having that 16 pick. So obviously 31 is not quite as good as 20. Makes you think they might have to toss in another asset. Maybe that is a future second, maybe a 2019 second of their own, maybe even a future first. Who knows? But I think that one kind of gauges the market the best and what it would take to get up to take Young. And it seems like that's the guy at this point that they would take if they did find a deal.
And I guess from my point of view, if they do go Trey Young and DeAndre, and that's surely going to make the entire fan base freak out in a good way because they would see a direction they're going. But I'm kind of worried about that fit with not only Young and Ayton together, well, alongside Devin Booker, because all three are sub defenders right now. I can't imagine Trey Young being a plus defender in the NBA. DeAndre is at least going to take 3 to 4 years, in my opinion, before he becomes an average defender. So what's it going to take for the Suns, if they do go in that direction, to build a two-way team? Because sure, they'll score 120 points a night, but it's hard for me to even imagine that the other team won't score 125.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem you're already running into. You see that in places like Portland, even Washington, teams that have two talented guards, but maybe that don't have a ton of defensive talent, ton of defensive versatility. You just see how it hamstrings the team building you have to do. I mean, Portland has, like, it's funny because I've been thinking about it with this year's draft, doing these mock drafts every week, and it's like Portland, it would be a comparison to make with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard kind of being similarly defensive challenged like Booker and Trey Young would be in this scenario. And it seems like because they have so many deficiencies on defense with those two guys playing at the guard spots, that they don't have any wings, but they do. They have Alfred Kaminu, they have Mo Harkless, they have even Evan Turner is pretty, you know, a versatile defensive piece. And so you see with how desperately they've tried to acquire talent to make that team work, with Yusuf Nurkic being a similar, more, you know, traditional center like Ayton would be, it's so difficult to build the team that way because of what you have to make up for. You know, you're not really finding complementary players, you're finding like substitute players where, oh, well, our guards don't play defense, so our whole entire philosophy has to be built around, like, covering for them.
Now, let's say they do go in that route, just for this example, because if they do go in that direction, I think they have to hit free agency really, really hard on defense. And some names I throw in your direction, Brendan, would be Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, Luke Amba-Amute. Those three make sense to me, even Derek Favors as well. Those four guys probably you have to go get in free agency aggressively to make this team at least a competent defensive team. So do you think for those guys to even be in consideration for the Suns with the core of Young, Ayton, Booker, and Jackson, do you think going in that direction in free agency and probably overpaying for a guy like Marcus Smart around $15 million a year, Derek Favors around $15, $17 million a year makes sense in that way?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way that they play their hand in the draft, I would add Danny Green and Trevor Ariza as two extra names, veteran defensive-minded guys that can shoot as well. To that list that you made, I think those are kind of the names we've been thinking about, but it would become even more important to really prioritize the defensive aspect if they were to go this route and grab Ayton and Young. And I think that I just feel like, okay, so to me, it's like if they really were to be aggressive about this year, which maybe drafting two rookies is not necessarily what you'd think of when you think about being aggressive in a single season, but to me, it would signal that they're kind of pushing all their chips into the middle of the table. If they were to cash in, give up 16-31 and maybe, let's say, a future first just to do this, next year would be pretty important as far as those guys kind of need to be supported in the right way. And so to me, I think you would start to see similar to what Philadelphia did this year in a kind of a similar season to what the Suns might be facing next year, where they signed Redick and Amir Johnson to one-year massive overpay deals just to kind of provide some insulation for the rest of the roster. I think you would see something like that with one, two, three of those guys we just mentioned.
I'm glad you brought up the aggressive part because, like we've said all throughout the past few months, and so is Ryan McDonough, he plans to be aggressive this summer, and that time has finally come for the Suns with a week away before the draft. Wheeling and dealing could happen any time now, even as we're recording this. But with Ryan McDonough, just what do you think he is thinking about in his mind? Obviously, we don't know that, but what's his term you think he's thinking about as far as being quote-unquote aggressive, and especially next week on draft night?
Well, I think it was, you know, all along it seemed like an easy thing for him to say because they have so many, they have the means to be aggressive. Not a lot of teams can say that right now. So combining the ability to create cap space with multiple first round picks, you could even consider 31 pretty, I mean, it's the closest thing to a first without being a first, and the future assets that they have. It was always going to be true that they could be aggressive. So, you know, we've heard more rumors this summer, I think, than we can remember in other summers as far as moving up in the draft and, you know, being aggressive on draft night, which that includes the year that they actually did something. So I think that, like we said, it's likely there's a trade on draft night. It's likely that they're going to add some sort of talent in free agency. So I think he's done well to kind of keep all of those options open. And, you know, we were texting last night, like, I don't think either one of us really has a firm idea of what they're going to do. And that's probably to his benefit.
How crazy do you think this draft is going to be? Because from all indications, it seems like the Kings can even make it crazy. Number two of Michael Porter, it seems like the favorite now, all of a sudden, even with his injury problems. And if that's the case, we're in for a really wild night, in my opinion. Maybe even trade back at number two overall. Maybe all kicks off number there, all the way up there. But what's your thoughts on how draft night's going to go? Because I think it's really setting for the Suns, if they want to really win draft night. And if teams like, let's say, Memphis number four are really trying to move out, if McDonough wants to really just go all, really completely all in and just move all of his chips in, is it crazy to say he might be able to acquire a second top five pick?
Yeah, there's so many. It seems like nobody wants to pick a player in the 2 through 5 range. Nobody wants to take a player, which you're looking at Sacramento, who hasn't made the playoffs in my whole life, it feels like. The Grizzlies, who are, you know, desperate for some talent with a bloated cap situation and not a lot of young players. And, you know, the Hawks and them, they have no core pieces outside of maybe John Collins, maybe Torian Prince. Like, these are teams that desperately need to add players and seemingly don't want to do it, or are prioritizing future assets over a draft that, by all considerations, seems to be pretty good. I really like a lot, like probably the top 7 guys in this draft. So you know, who knows who's even picking 2 through 5, let alone who they pick. And yeah, you're right. The agents for Jaren Jackson and Michael Porter are wizards with the job that they've done getting those guys seemingly in line to be picked 2 and 3 on draft night, if all things kind of go according to reports at this point. That's crazy because Jackson barely played this year compared to some of these guys, and Porter literally didn't really play at all. So if those guys were to go 2 and 3, I think the draft would shake up in a really interesting way.
Oh, yeah, it would definitely go down a really interesting path. And if it does go that route, before I get into my trades, I made an extra one as well, but this one just popped in my head, so I might as well throw it your way.
Go for it.
If that's how it plays out and the Suns go Ayton, the Kings go Porter, the Hawks go Jackson, and Luka Doncic is sitting on the board for Memphis number 4, does Ryan McDonough dial up Memphis and offer the Godfather package?
See, so I think Memphis is one interesting team. Michael Scotto, among other people, he writes over at The Athletic, mostly the New York site, but he's been doing some good draft stuff, and talked about how Chandler Parsons is available as a package with the number 4 overall pick. So they're trying to use that to get off of one of their worst contracts, just in the fact that he really isn't a player at this point, can't stay healthy. Gasol and Conley, maybe they move on from down the line, but on draft night, it seems like Parsons would be the guy. So maybe their thinking is, you know, they have those two players in place, Conley and Gasol, that they can try to compete with, especially if they can clear some salary and add talent. And so maybe they're thinking, if we can get future assets to restock the cupboard after those guys are gone, after we're more likely to trade them with less years on their contract. So maybe that's the thinking there, is that picking this year, especially not even having their own pick next year, maybe you're not really going to be able to completely overhaul and rebuild your team that way. So that sort of makes sense. I don't know what they would be looking for or how far in the future, but you start to think about the 2020 Milwaukee pick and 2021 Heat pick, and that maybe does kind of go along their timeline a little bit better. So if the Suns can stomach Chandler Parsons, who has 2 years left on his deal, kind of like Brandon Knight does, then maybe they do something like that.
Dean, that's even possible, though, for the Suns to carry not only Brandon Knight's contract, but Chandler Parsons' contract, two of probably the bottom 5 worst contracts in the NBA.
Well, I think that it would certainly be something that they should have done 2 seasons ago if that's what they were really hoping to do. And that's what I keep coming back to. We talked about those deals where young rebuilding teams with cap space take on an asset. They've never done that. And they could have pretty much this entire time of the rebuild been a part of those deals. Those deals have happened around them for lesser assets than they could have offered. So I just think it's probably unlikely that they do something like that, because if they were going to, I think they already would have.
That's a good point, because like you mentioned, they've had 2 or 3 offseasons in a row now where they've had opportunities. D'Angelo Russell could have been had last summer for Timofey Mozgov. I don't even know how the Suns weren't on that, but they might have been. Who knows? But I guess we can just dive right into the trade ideas that me and you both camp with. And this is my extra one I made on the fly here while we were talking, but I think this one makes sense for both sides. So I'll do this one really quick before we really go into some more in-depth ones. But it's between the Phoenix Suns and the Los Angeles Clippers. And for me, I'm thinking for them, this is the scenario where if there's a guy like, let's say, Mikal Bridges, Miles Bridges, Wendell Carter, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Colin Sexton, any one of those guys who they might be in love with, who they say, oh, they're not going to be there between 12 and 16. They could call up LA, and I think they might be able to do this. And here's my deal. The Clippers receive number 16, number 31, Marquese Chriss, Troy Daniels, and Jared Dudley. The Suns receive Patrick Beverley, Tobias Harris, and number 12 overall.
I think that that makes some sense, but the problem for me in trying to understand the Clippers' priorities is just wondering how much they're really wanting to, like, completely reshuffle, which I guess that wouldn't really be overhauling the team, but they did just get Harris. I think that's the hang-up for me in that sort of a deal, would be that they just got Harris back for Blake Griffin and seemingly like him because he's on a long-term deal. Like, he wasn't the kind of salary filler player. He seems to be somebody that they like. Maybe they liked him for the purpose of flipping him again in a deal like this and getting a younger player like Marquese Chriss, but I don't know. It's tough for me to know what direction they want to go in. And, you know, I guess if they liked Chris, then that deal probably works. From the Suns' perspective, I think it's good. I think Harris is a good candidate to pair if they were to take DeAndre Ayton. You know, defense would still be a concern there, but that's the kind of versatility you would be hoping for at the power forward position, I think.
And also, I think him and Patrick Beverley would make up one of the best, if Beverley wasn't starting at point guard, I think he would, but Beverley and Harris all of a sudden makes you one of the better second unit combinations as far as how it was last year.
I mean, I think Harris would be starting if that happened, but yeah, I mean, the talent on the Suns would certainly be upgraded there, and it's probably, you know, I don't know about Beverley, just the injury, I don't really know where he stands with that. He's kind of perennially injured at this point, so that's always been my hesitancy when the Suns, or when people talk about him as a Suns target, but obviously the fit with Booker is kind of perfect.
Okay, and for my next deal, this is kind of the realistic one, then my final one is kind of sort of unrealistic, but it could happen if some scenario happens with the other person that I'm going to discuss later on. But for this next deal, it's kind of the most realistic one I could think of, because the Cavs might be in a situation where they believe LeBron James leaves. And if that's the case, and going off Brian Windhorst's report last week, and it was that there, if Kevin Love was offered out, he's going to be made available to a lot of teams this summer, and it will take a first-round pick at least. But it sounds like that's all it will take for Kevin Love, would be the main package of a first-round pick, but probably a good one too. So this is here, I came up with a three-team deal, and it involves the Suns, Nuggets, and Cavs. The Suns receive Kevin Love. The Nuggets receive number 16 overall in Ante Zizic. Then the Cleveland Cavaliers receive Kenneth Faried, Jared Dudley, Troy Daniels, Marquise Chris, and number 14 overall. So the Cavs now have number 8 and number 14 to trade up, or use both for a star.
Yeah, Denver, Cleveland, and Phoenix being involved in a deal sounds a little bit familiar. But I think I like that one. I mean, the Faried thing, I think, is where a lot of the deals are going to kind of start to be built around come, you know, the next week or so heading up into the draft, with that's kind of right on the border of where you can start to be creative. It's a lottery pick, so that kind of holds weight. It seems like Faried's not unplayable like some of these guys. Chandler Parsons, who we talked about, is. So, you know, he's somebody you could still put on the court for a younger, worse team. I don't know where Love fits. That's part of the, like, I'm so used to watching him spot up around a LeBron James pick and roll that trying to imagine him in another team, like playing as he did in Minnesota, what kind of player is he? That's what's puzzling to me about any deal with Love, is like, what's he best doing if he's not just taking 8 threes around LeBron?
I have to ask, because Kevin Love is going to be a guy we probably discuss a lot over the next month or so, or even the next week, if there's rumors that begin to intensify with Kevin Love. But how do you think he fits into the offense, like usage percentage wise? Because if they go DeAndre and add him in to Devin Booker and Josh Jackson, those are all three guys with plus 20, probably plus 25 usage rates. And Kevin Love's going to be another guy that's going to be wanting the ball as well. So how does he fit into that dynamic with three young guys who are pretty ball dominant right now in their development?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think he's somebody who has to be handling the ball and making plays a lot. I just feel like he's probably never going to return to that type of player like he was in Minnesota, just with the way that the league has gone. You have to be a really, really excellent passer, I think, out of the post to do stuff like that, or be such an actual ball handling type, like a Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, who's a forward that can actually drive and make plays. So I don't think he's going to be used that way. I think, you know, in most situations, he's going to be used like he was with LeBron James. So to me, Booker running the offense for the most part in Phoenix, and Love kind of playing similarly, where he's making smart plays when the opportunity comes, and then, you know, mostly just spotting up. I think that kind of role would work in Phoenix. But if they do draft Ayton and take Love, that's, you know, defensive, you have to get such a great defensive forward, I think, to pair with Ayton for me to feel really, really good about it going forward.
I believe Love is also a free agent in 2020. So do you think it makes sense to trade assets for a guy who's close to 30 years old already and could be had maybe for way cheaper with his relationship with James Jones? He called him, I believe, one of his greatest teammates of all time last summer on Instagram. I think they have a really close bond together, so he could be had way cheaper than the number 16 overall pick.
Yeah, I think that if it's only something like 16 or just let's just not even be that specific about it. If you can get him for a first round pick, like you mentioned as the starting price, and then add, you know, some C minus prospect, like, you know, Davon Reed, and, or even, you know, even like a Marquise Chris, I wouldn't be against giving up if it was like a first round pick in Marquise Chris. I know that doesn't really work salary wise, but I think the Cavs, if they do rebuild, would be fine taking some crappy contract, Jared Dudley or something like that, that's expiring. So I think that there's definitely a way to do that deal if that asking price is that low, which, you know, if LeBron leaves, they won't really have a ton of bargaining power because it'll be obvious they need to rebuild at that point.
Yeah, I think Cleveland's really in for an overhaul, especially if LeBron gives him the leeway a little bit ahead of time on July 1st, but I don't think that's going to happen with how usually he's been when he's been a free agent, 2010, 2014, but he usually goes dark on the Cavs. But I'm going to move on to my final deal. And it's sort of unrealistic, but I think it kind of has a smidge chance of happening because it's a big market team and they all could want to go there. And it involves the scenario of LeBron James goes to the Los Angeles Lakers. So does Paul George. But not only that, Kawhi Leonard wants to join them too to make a big three in Los Angeles. And he doesn't sign a Supermax. He forced a trade out of LA. And the Suns get involved here to help facilitate the deal and to help the Lakers get off some of that salary because some of that young core is going to have to go. Here's what I came up with. The Lakers receive Kawhi Leonard and Marquise Chris. The San Antonio Spurs receive Jared Dudley, Brandon Ingram, Dragan Bender, number 16 overall, Milwaukee pick. The Phoenix Suns receive Luol Deng, who could be stretched out immediately if you want to, and Lonzo Ball. I got lost you there.
Remember when we were talking about how not we, but Suns fans were worried about Lonzo's fit in Phoenix because Eric Bledsoe already played here? That feels like an eternity ago because he's actually a pretty solid fit next to Booker. And, you know, from the Suns' perspective, I think that that really works. You know, everything else would just be such mayhem. Like you mentioned, not only does LeBron tend to go quiet in those situations, but what happens afterward completely makes up for it on a, you know, five times the scale where players and picks are just flying to make everything work. So again, if the Suns can be a facilitator in a deal like that and end up with a prospect, I think that they have to be listening to something like that. I really wish the draft was after free agency. That would be, or it start, you know, maybe on July 1st and it all happened at once, something like that. It just doesn't make sense for it to be 12 days ahead of time or whatever it is.
Doesn't it make sense from the Lakers' point of view? Because I feel like that scenario I mentioned to you is kind of realistic because if Kawhi wants to be back in California, he could go and join the duo of LeBron and PG if they sign there. And if that's the case, who's the young guy that's going to have to go in that scenario? Because I imagine that almost all of Kuzma, Ingram, and Ball would have to leave.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I haven't looked at it. As far as like talent-wise, I think Ingram doesn't, I don't know what you need him for at that point. If you have those three guys all on the court at the same time, he's, you know, you're not going to play 4, 6, 8 guys unless, you know, they're not going to do that. So he seems more of a candidate to leave, and his value is pretty high as well. Probably maybe Lonzo just because he's younger and we haven't seen as much. But to me, I think, you know, Ingram probably has the best trade value on the team. And then, you know, even their secondary assets like Josh Hart, they would have to renounce Julius Randle. So that team would look drastically different, and they have a lot of talent the Suns should have their eye on for sure.
Now, if the Suns were to get back Lonzo Ball in return as the main part of that deal, I guess I should ask this because it should be asked in the front office. Are you able to deal with the LeVar Ball headache, and are you good with allowing Devin Booker and everyone else to deal with the LeVar Ball headache as well?
I don't think it's – I don't know. When they went to go play in Lithuania, we never really heard from them again for the most part. I think it's a headache, but yeah, obviously if he got traded out of LA, that would be a disaster. I don't know. Everything seems to be better for the most part because he stayed right around the corner from their home. But I don't know. To me, if it became a winning situation, if the Suns were better because of Lonzo coming and added talent and started to be a competitive team again, like, I don't know. To me, for players, winning seems to solve all the problems. I feel like that's the same for a father that's as crazy as LeVar. Like, if he's successful, you can't really be upset that your child is doing well, you know?
It's crazy to say in 2018 we're actually talking about that on an episode of a podcast as far as how a father gets involved with an NBA franchise, but I just think that's...
It's crazy. I mean, but, like, the Lakers are going to be... They're always in the news. Like, they're going to be talking... People better get used to talking about the Lakers, because no matter what happens, their name's going to come up more than any other team.
Oh, especially if LeBron goes there, too. It's going to be in the overdrive. So now I have my few deals for you, and now hit me with yours.
Yeah, so I think basing it, and mine are not as elaborate, but one of them, it was similar. We didn't really plug the Locked On NBA Network mock draft we all did.
Oh, you guys would have hated it. They would have hated it.
Well, yeah. People probably maybe don't like who we ended up going with, but the whole thing was fun, so people should go listen to it because it got a little bit interesting. I think Memphis took Trae Young. So if you're in for, like, a completely alternate reality draft world, and just to hear what, you know, each of these teams is thinking about, we did a few episodes on the main Locked On NBA show. So, yeah, we picked Luka Doncic at number one. So, you know, maybe if you're angry about that, it's not for you. But definitely go check that out. But one of the deals we talked about doing with the hosts of the Mavericks podcast is just a deal centered around them getting 16 if we take back a salary. Similar to that, I guess, but kind of flipping it where Michael Scotto, in that same mock draft he released today, reported that the Hawks are aggressive in trying to use their cap space to absorb a bad contract in return for a first round pick or a young asset. To me, I think that could make sense depending on how the Suns feel like the next couple summers will go. Maybe Brandon Knight and the 16th pick to Atlanta for some filler on their part could make sense, where, you know, they're not really looking to be competitive over the next couple seasons. And Dennis Schroeder, you know, they don't really have a two guard that's firmly entrenched. Just riding with those two guys and filling in the roster behind them could make some sense. What do you think about that?
That makes some sense. Think maybe Dink and Land would throw a pick back Phoenix's way, or do you think Phoenix would really budge on that, even though they'd throw in Brandon Knight?
They might, maybe a second or something to kind of compensate and split the difference a little bit. The report does say the worse the contract, the higher the compensation Atlanta would seek. The 16th pick is pretty high. So, like, you know, most of these deals, like the Allen Crabb deal, for instance, which is why Brooklyn has a pick this year, I think, or maybe that was last year. Either way, I think that was a pick in the 20s. So it certainly could happen. I think the Knight contract is not particularly bad compared to a lot of the other ones. So maybe, you know, maybe a second to split the difference.
I actually like that deal, to be honest, because it gives them flexibility not only this summer, but it gives them so much flexibility in 2019 if they just keep that salary, because shutting Brandon Knight's deal a year early, I think, is huge for them, because wouldn't they have room for easily two max slots at that point?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you're looking at whoever, you know, maybe let's say DeAndre Ayton, Josh Jackson, and then if Booker waits until now, next summer to sign his extension, then it's just his cap hold, and TJ Warren's contract would really be the only contracts on the books in 2019 going into when they are going to really try to be aggressive to fill in the talent. So it would, if they could get off of Knight, I think that would be really big.
I guess I don't want to get too ahead of myself because this is a year in advance, but if Ayton, Booker, and Jackson are good next year, like they're at least cohesive enough that it's talented enough that people see, okay, in a couple years this could be a legit contender down the line once Golden State gets old and all that. But who are some names in the elite crop of 2019 that might make sense as far as I could see them possibly leaving that team to come join Phoenix to that final piece?
I think Clay is the big one to me. I don't really see a situation where he wants to leave Golden State, but I mean, we have a year until that happens for things to change. He's the one that fits to me pretty well next to Booker. You know, and maybe at that point, Jackson's playing the four a little bit more. You know, like you said, not to get too far ahead, but you do have to kind of think about fit with how many young players are on this team at this point. And, you know, you're not just going to add a free agent regardless of fit. So I think he's somebody, you know, there's other names where you're not really sure yet what'll happen. Jimmy Butler could sign an extension between now and then with Minnesota. He seems happy there, but he would be a really tremendous fit with Booker as well. I don't know. I mean, a lot of these guys have California connections or seem likely to sign with their new team, their current team. But there's a lot of talent coming off the books next summer.
For sure. I think either way, if they were to let go of Brandon Knight a year early, I think that makes a huge difference for their cap room either way. If they save it or they use it in trades, whatever way they go. But what's your next deal?
It's, again, based on some of the reporting going on. Not super elaborate, but the report says the Nets are a team that's been kind of going around rumor-wise for a while, but would offer their 29 pick and Spencer Dinwiddie, who's somebody I think you tweeted out from the Brightside account, as a candidate to add at point guard position next year to pair with Booker. They want to move up into the teens. So maybe, I don't know, 16, 31, and one of Dudley or Tyson Chandler for 29 and Dinwiddie. That seems like the Nets maybe wouldn't do that just to move up 13 slots, but you know, that seems like the kind of parameters that they're reportedly going after.
I think maybe if you've switched out Troy Daniels' contract instead of Dudley or Chandler, I think they do that because...
Yeah, something not so massive.
I think that allows them not only... Because I think they already have D'Angelo Russell. I don't think Spencer Dinwiddie's value is going to be as high as it will be this summer. And like you said, Phoenix does need a point guard. I think Dinwiddie, next to Ayton, Booker, and Jackson, with Nova's role, he'd be the fourth or fifth scoring option on the floor. And if Spencer Dinwiddie is your fourth or fifth scoring option, I think that's a pretty good outcome for the Suns. I think he fits really well. He's 6'6", can shoot the three. I think that makes a lot of sense because you still get, like as you mentioned, number 29 overall. And I think that still allows you easily one of, let's say, Jacob Evans, D'Anthony Melton, Dante DiVincenzo. I think one of those guys will still be there.
Yeah, I mean, before we go, I think one of the questions there, if that sort of deal materialized, one, you know, there's maybe combo guard / wing types that'll be available at 31 for the Suns, like you mentioned those names right there. But I think Aaron Holiday, Eli Okobo, those are the two primary, like, pure point guard types of players who are in the range between 16 and 31. I think they'll both be gone. So I guess the question in that sort of deal would be, is Dinwiddie a better long-term prospect and or fit than Holiday or Okobo?
What do you think on that?
I mean, I think he is, but I always tend to fall into the trap of trusting what I've seen over what could be. I really think he's going to be better than Holiday, but Okobo, I think, is a pretty interesting guy.
For sure. I think, honestly, if the Suns do stay at 16, I think Okobo and Aaron Holiday, maybe D'Anthony Melton, but I think his stock slipped pretty far to like 31 now. I think he could be available at 31 because I saw the Ringer's latest mock draft. He went to 32 at Atlanta, so if he's there at 31, I'll be doing backflips. But either way, I think it's going to be a really fun draft. I appreciate you guys listening on today's podcast, and we'll be back with you guys.